Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Station. Welcome to The Property Beat, where real estate is part of your life. The coffee is hot, the conversation lively, and we're talking real estate. I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with co-host Lisa P., bringing you news and information from the real estate world. So pull up that chair, get out the coffee and pen and pencil, and let's join in the fun.
Good morning out there, and welcome to The Property Beat. I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with co-host Lisa P. Good morning, Miss Lisa.
Good morning, Cliff. How's it going?
It seems like kind of a slow Wednesday morning, but I got to say, I'm happy that it's not raining right at this very second. So here we are, and folks, keeping us safe and out of trouble in the booth is Marco. Good morning, Marco.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Wow, we've got a voice, man. We've never heard you.
I'm feeling much more confident now. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, guys.
So he's keeping us safe and out of trouble this morning. And this is our fourth or fifth week now, I guess, on the show here at KLOK, our new home at 1170 a.m., and we're excited about it. So for those of you that have not heard the show before, we're a real estate talk show, and we generally have a guest on every week. This week is no different. This week we have Eric Lee of Charles Lee & Sons. He's a home inspector extraordinaire, and we are going to be talking to him about home inspections, things to look for, things to be aware of.
Things to run away from.
Yeah. What's the process really like? Oh, my God, should I really do this? Yeah, so it's going to be good. If you have a question for our guest or anything about anything in real estate, you can give us a call at 408-912-5565. Again, that's 408-912-5565. But before we get to our guest, I always like to check in with Miss Lisa P. and kind of hear of the antics of the week. So what's going on? What's happening out there?
Well, I was giving some thought this morning when I was taking a shower, and I thought we should rename this segment In the Trenches. Because literally we are all in the trenches, and we're just not quite sure what that's going to look like at the end of the day. I do have kind of an interesting story or a little, just an interesting, like I said, story that I want to hear what you think, okay. if this is the good, the bad, the ugly, or whatever. So anyway.
All right, Mark, buckle in. Here it comes.
Okay, so I heard that, we're in a multiple offer environment these days. And recently what has happened is the buyer's agents have gone to the listing agents and said, I will refer my buyer to you if you accept our offer.
Oh.
So,
wow.
Where's the ethics in that? Is it good for the buyer? Is it good for the seller? Is it?
Wow.
Can the agents that lose out on this deal get form some kind of complaint against these kind of practices? What's your thought?
Wow, that is tricky. So, all right, so an agent, I'm representing a buyer, and I know that I'm in multiple offers, and I want my buyer to get the house. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to refer it to the listing agent so that the listing agent makes more money and theoretically has an incentive to try to sell it to my buyer versus my buyer not getting it or randomly getting it.
Correct.
Wow.
Okay, and here's my other question.
Uh-huh.
Does the listing agent, if they decide to accept this, does the listing agent need to then disclose it to the other agents who are in this competitive environment saying that now they are now, quote, double ending the deal?
Yeah, so that's really interesting. So let me address that one last because I think that's a very good question. So let's say – so now I'm in a multiple offer situation, and you know the code of ethics, if it's a realtor member and it's a code of ethics requires that – a realtor tells all other real estate agents, buyer's agents, for example, how many offers they have coming in and whether, in fact, there is a dual representation by the listing agent with one of the buyers. So I think that they, in order to kind of CYA, if you will, cover your embrasure, they would have to go ahead. I would go ahead, if I'm the listing agent, I would say, okay, fine. If I did this, I'm now going to do two things. One is I'm going to disclose to the seller that now I have a dual agency relationship with Mr. Smith's buyer and that I'm going to be receiving compensation for that. Then I'd have to let the other agents that are writing their multiple offers that now we, in fact, are representing one of these offers ourselves. So I think that's the easy part. The more difficult part is this an okay thing to do? You know, let's take it from the buy side for a moment. The buyer's agent is, in fact, being pretty altruistic, if you will. There's nothing illegal about referring a buyer to a listing agent. That's absolutely okay. In fact, we've done it in the past in the industry when, let's say my buyer wants to buy an apartment building and I've never sold an apartment building, so I might just refer them to the listing agent to get it done as opposed to, it's like referring to any agent, it just happens to be the listing agent. So I think that part's okay. I think the listing agent can legally do this. It's not that it's not okay to do, but it just smells funny. You know, at the end of the day, it has a funny feel to it, but I got to tell you, I don't think there's anything that I can think of that's illegal. And if you have input on that, folks, give us a call at 408-912-5565. If you were a buyer and buying real estate, would you consider just having your agent refer you to the listing agent in hopes of getting a better or getting the deal? Yeah, it's a toughie because it really implies that the reason you would do that is it implies that the listing agent will place his or her self-interest high on the scale and then in turn tend to work with that buyer more. And does that mean – you know, then they enter into other areas. Are they going to let that buyer know about inside numbering in terms of what other offers are or not? And that's where it gets dicey. Or whether they do it or not, you're going to think they're doing it.
Well, it sounds a little bit like a cluster screw to me.
Yeah,
you know, it's not going to be long before we see some sort of disclosure coming our way.
Yeah, that's interesting. Sounds like is that? Are you seeing that in Marin County or San Francisco or?
I just heard about it, and I suspect that it's probably started in San Francisco, and it's coming this way.
Wow. Okay. Well, folks, with that, we'd like to encourage you to be part of the conversation here at 408-912-5565, where you can tweet us. Hit us up on Twitter, at The Property Beat. And in case you missed a show but want to stay in, involved, and so forth, and hear our archive shows, you can find us on iTunes or on theproperty.com website. We are going to take a quick look at some real estate stories right after this.
Hi, this is Cliff Perotti, host of The Property Beat. So you may not know this, but we are sponsored by a local real estate company here in Northern California called Lyon & Foster International. The good folks at Lyon & Foster are an international luxury real estate company, helping home buyers and sellers as well as investors, whether they're buying or selling a home locally here in the Bay Area or abroad in a foreign country. So if you'd like some help or like to discuss those opportunities, please give the folks at Lyon & Foster a call. You can reach them toll-free at 855-367-4200. Again, 855-367-4200. Or you can email them at thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com. Again, that's thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com.
All right. Welcome back to The Property Beat, where we are bringing you real estate news from the week. LP, what do you got?
You know, you got to love your neighbors because 9 out of 10, they know what's going on in your hood way before you do. And I actually had a neighbor tell me that a famous chef, Tyler Florence, had purchased a property in Corte Madera. And, you know, I knew his house was on the market and he sold it in Mill Valley. But what I didn't know is that he actually purchased a property right up the street from us.
Oh, wow.
Yep. It's formerly known as the Villa Marin Estate. It is 5 acres. 5 acres of pretty
is
much
that
flat
where the
land.
Dairy used to be?
No.
At the end? No.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No, this was built in 1909. It's 5-7 bedrooms, 4.5 baths, huge kitchens, vaulted ceiling. It's really, it was a very interesting property to preview because it had a lot of different time periods going on. It felt very kind of gothic with box ceilings, and then it felt a little bit newer, more contemporary. There was just a lot of stuff going on. So I'm sure that Mr. Florence will be out there with his architects quite busy, you know, turning this into his palatial palace. And the only thing I'm hoping is that he has a block party and we get invited. What do you think?
Yeah, I hope that he has a great dinner party. That's what I'm hoping.
Exactly, exactly. So he's the new neighbor in the hood, and, you know, we want to welcome you and look forward to some of your tasty little events.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm going to bring you news from San Francisco. First of all, it looks like we just got a call from, looks like Nanina from Santa Clara. Nanina, are you there?
Hi, I'm there.
Great. I'm sorry. I hope I pronounced your name right. You had a question or a comment for us.
Yeah, I do. I was driving and I was listening to the comment that a buyer's agent can, basically a seller's agent can also be a buyer's agent, and there's nothing non-ethical about it. I ran into a situation many years ago where we were trying to put an offer on the house, and the seller's agent said, I could be your agent and get this house for you if you go through me.
Yeah.
And we thought, huh, that doesn't sound right. You know, she's saying she can make sure, we put the right, she said, we'll get you the higher offers, you'll mm-hmm. get the home. And we didn't go through her. We went through another agent instead and put an offer. And what really happened is somebody else ended up getting the house, and their offer was $2,000 more than ours. And she, the seller agent was
and buyer. Let's guess, she represented them.
Yeah. We felt cheated. We felt, what was done was non-ethical in a sense, maybe disclosing our price to the other buyer and probably putting a better offer on the house. I'm thinking this is a very common situation, especially in the Bay Area, because there's people with lot of money who want to buy home, and it's so difficult with getting multiple offers on homes.
Yeah, it's interesting because, so here's an interesting side note. If the seller says to their listing agent that you can tell your buyer what this other offer is, so let's say in your case that if the listing agent went and asked the seller, can I tell my buyer what, is it Nanina, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, what Nanina's offer is, and the seller says yes, then there's an interesting question that the agent would then theoretically have the right to tell the competing buyer. Now, you certainly didn't give him permission to do that. So it gets into this really squirrely area. Yeah, it's not a good thing. Here's the clue. If an agent is saying to you, let's say you walk into an open house and you say, well, we've been working with an agent, and they turn around and they say, you know what, if you buy this house through me, you have a higher likelihood of getting the house, I would probably run for the hills, because that's an agent that's got an agenda on the table that has nothing to do with you getting a quality home.
Exactly. That is the situation we ran into. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And you may lose out on the house, and it does happen. You know what we always say, which is, hey, it always works out for the best, and that must not have been your house. And hopefully you got a – did you get a better place?
Yes, I did.
Oh, good.
That's
good.
It.
I like
all right.
the story.
Thanks for the call, Nina.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, so I'm going to go back to our story. I was going to bring you one story here from San Francisco. There's an interesting legislation that's been proposed by David Chu at the Board of Supervisors, where he is actually attempting to force a tenant first right of refusal on all buildings that are sold. So
wow.
It would mean – now, there's legislation like this in place in Washington, D.C., Baltimore, and the state of Florida, where you have to give them a certain notice that, hey, we've got a buyer that's willing to pay this dollars for the property. And so how do you feel about that? I mean, was that a good thing or a bad thing? It's a good controversial topic.
I guess it can be a good thing for the seller. My question is that tenant going to be purchasing this property at market value?
Yes, no. So,
okay.
So
all
let's
right.
say
so it's market rate.
The way a first right of refusal works is that I go out and I market the property to the market.
Right.
And let's say I get an offer for $1 million. Now I have to go back to the tenants and say, do you want to buy this place for $1 million? And are you having to give it to all the tenants?
That was my next question.
Or do you give it to them in piecemeal, like, okay, you're on one third of the building, so you can buy one. I mean, it could be.
Okay, so why does
really
dear
tricky.
David want to do this?
Well, they're always fighting for making sure that because the rents are just skyrocketing, property values are skyrocketing, people are buying places. They're concerned about the Ellis Act. So the Ellis Act says you can go and take your business, take your building out of the rental business.
Mm-hmm.
So now you get everybody out, and then you turn around and you sell the building to a new person who's going to live in it. Well, okay, it's not a rental property, and all that's legal. But they're concerned that that's going to cause a loss of rental properties on the market. And so they want to put the hands, you know, the control, a little bit of control back in the tenant's hands to try to save their home so they can stay there. Now, he did a project like this in North Beach. He created a co-op with a bunch of units. I want to say it was on Columbus Avenue. Yeah, 53 Columbus Avenue.
I kind of like that idea.
And there was it was a 21-unit building, and he basically converted it into a co-op. And so, I mean, the concept is interesting. So long as the landlord is not yet getting another stick in the eye, I don't buy that. but I get it. It's just, wow, that's going to – can you imagine? Now you have to – if you have tenants that you have this law you have to comply with. Now, this isn't active yet. It's just in discussions.
Well, and how long do they have to exercise that? Right.
That's the question. How long would they have? So the details it doesn't get into. This is just a press release report.
I'd give them 3 days.
But that imagine. So now you now here's the goofy part. You go ahead and you accept an offer on Monday from a buyer A, subject to the tenant's first right of refusal. And so then, two of the tenants are out of the three want to buy the building, but the two of them can't afford it. I just see this getting into a.
I would put offer it to the tenants prior to putting it on the market.
Yeah. So it's tricky. You know, I think what I'm going to do is file this one. Okay.
That's a great idea. I kind of want to file my second story
okay.
as well.
Oh, well.
All right.
Do it.
Okay. Well, this is about Suzanne Saperstein. Do you know who she is?
Nope.
I didn't either. Evidently, she's a Swedish-born model who was a competitive skier. She bought a place in Los Angeles called Fleur de Lis,
oh, yeah.
and at some big, huge, gargantuan estate, probably has a lot of Ivana Trump kind of decor in it. But anyway, so she just sold it all cash for $102 million. $102 million
wow.
cash.
Wow.
And she, I guess the property had been on and off the market for the last 6 years, and of course, you know, the market's improved. So not only does she get one offer, she gets three. One from a Chinese buyer and the other one from a European buyer.
Wow.
And,
wow.
So.
Hey, you know what? That's what's happening out there. All right. I have a story, but we're going to run out of time here. So we're going to take our break, and we'll be right back with our mailbag.
Hi, this is Cliff Perotti, host of The Property Beat on KLOK 1170 AM. Lisa P. and I want to let you know that we are available to help you with your real estate needs, whether locally here in the Bay Area or internationally. You can reach us directly at 415-298-1899. Again, that's 415-298-1899. Or email us at Cliff or Lisa at thepropertybeat.com. We look forward to helping you with your real estate needs.
All right, welcome back to The Property Beat. And it's time to hear from you, our listeners, as we open our mailbag. All right, let's do it.
All righty, we have a question from Kathy in San Francisco this morning. She says she is taking over a property for my mom, and the tenants have been there a long time. Is there anything I can do, and should I be concerned about the tenants that have been there for over, more than 20 years?
Wow,
this
well,
doesn't sound like fun.
Yeah, no, first of all, you got to think about your first right of refusal.
Yeah, well, luckily it's not in place because that was going through my mind.
Yeah.
Poor thing.
No, so, gosh, what would you think? Well, I'll tell you what. You want to look back at the rent history to make sure there were no illegal rent increases over the period of time, because that's generally the biggest problem that happens. And it happens, let's say that a tenant moves in 1979 into the building and they were paying $500 a month at that time. And now, miraculously, they're paying $720. And there's only been two rent increases through the process. One of them was a $100 increase, and one of them was a $20 increase. So that $100 increase, depending upon when it was given, may have been illegal. And if it was at the time, then every rent collected from then forward would be illegal. And this is only in San Francisco and parts of Berkeley, in Berkeley, under rent control ordinances. Actually, I shouldn't say that. Also, Oakland has a rent control ordinance as well. So that's the biggest problem is the economics of what is the history and what increases have happened. And the other thing I would say is when people have lived in a unit that long, they tend to start to take ownership. And what I mean by that is they begin to leak into other areas of the building. So, for example, Yeah, I've been parking my car in that garage for the last 10 years. Nobody said anything about it. No, it wasn't in my original lease, but I'd like to keep it now. Or I've been using that. I built a building in the very back for my wood shop, and I've got it there, and I keep my supplies there or whatever it may be, and you never gave them permission because mom or mom's parent, whoever, somebody may have given. So you got that kind of stuff that can be a challenge. But those are the two areas of concern that I would look at.
So are they able to exercise those rights instead of leaking? Are they allowed to exercise their leaking rights? If so, I want to try that.
You know, it depends. It depends it really depends, and that's something for either an attorney or your property manager to look at, Kathy. So there you go. That's as much as we're going to get to on that one, but it's a good question. Also from Bob in San Francisco. Now, I got to share with you that this came in. Lisa P., this is the first time. You know, we know we're listening to because people call in and people write in and all that, but one of the funniest things that happened was we got an email or a message on our Property Beat website from Bob in San Francisco, and he writes in, "You folks are not as funny as you think. Your radio show is a joke, but not funny. Get a grip."
Hey, Bob. It's not supposed to be a comedy hour. It's supposed to be a little bit informative, and real estate can be a very dry, boring subject. Maybe that's the kind of show you're looking for. That's not us.
Yeah, you know what I say to Bob?
Hi.
Turn the channel. You don't have to listen to us if you don't like us. Get a grip. Thanks, Bob. Thanks for the input. We appreciate it. We love you, man. We love you. And hopefully we can win you over as a listener. All right, that's it for our mailbag this week. If you'd like to be part of the conversation and have your question read live on the air, simply submit your question via our website at thepropertybeat.com. Who knows, you could be on next week's show. We're going to be right back with our guest, Eric Lee, right after this.
Hi, this is Cliff Parati, host of The Property Beat on KLOK 1170 AM on Wednesday mornings from 10 to 11 AM. Our sponsors at Lyon & Foster International want to let you know that they offer property management services throughout the Bay Area. If you have a property management need for any kind of property, you can reach them at 415-367-4200, extension 207. Again, that's 415-367-4200, extension 207. If you have a property management need, reach out to the folks at Lyon & Foster International.
Welcome back to the Property Beat, where we are talking this week with Eric Lee of Charles Lee & Sons. He's a home inspector out of Marin County. He's been in the business for 20 years and a long time. In fact, we've known him a long time. I would say that this guy is the definition of a good home inspector at the end of the day. With buying picking up, we thought it would be a really good idea out there just to kind of talk about some of the issues that a buyer might want to look at. So welcome, Eric.
Good morning.
How are you, man?
We're doing good. We're doing good. happy to be on your show.
Oh, it's great to get you on here. I'm sorry that it hasn't happened sooner.
Well, since we have you, Eric, I'm wondering if you just might want to share just a little tad of something about you, something a little personal, unusual, that has nothing to do with you crawling around in scary houses.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I should keep my professional decorum here.
Man, forget it.
Don't.
You're on the show. Forget it. Even though we're not that funny here, apparently.
So you want
like
me to continue?
Yeah, like a hobby you want to share, something that you've done in the past.
Tell them about your hobby. We know what it is.
Basically, I do sculpture and done sculpture for many years, and you know, it's kind of a segue into homes and or vice versa, and that's what I do when I'm not crawling under a house or going up on a roof. I'm in my studio making art.
You know, and I have to say, he's good. He's not just a hobby sculpturist. He is exceptional.
And, you know, it's probably nice to get into the clay that you know is clean, as opposed to when you're crawling around underneath the house. God only knows what you're going to, you know, what you're going to run into. So.
It depends.
All righty.
So we'd like to remind our listeners, if you have a question you'd like to ask Eric Lee, our home inspector today, just give us a call at 408-912-5565.
For our listeners who don't really know what a home inspector does, can you give me a brief overview of a typical inspection and what you might do and cover?
Okay, well, basically a home inspector is checking the systems of a home out. They'll be looking at the roof and the foundation, the heating system, the electrical system, the support system of the roof and the attic, how well it's insulated, how well it's ventilated. Probably the most important part of an inspection, I think, is looking at the foundation and drainage, particularly in Marin County. And we generally spend a few hours doing that, and then we'll write a report and include pictures of what we've seen. And that's kind of our business in a nutshell.
So when you're doing your inspection, are you able to then call potential problems that you might see, like maybe there's something going on with the fireplace, and maybe recommend that they see other vendors to get their opinions? Or
Yeah, I'm sort of like your doctor that you go and see your general practitioner, and we'll look at we'll evaluate you and then send you down the hall to the specialist if it's needed. So you know, if we go in and we see a sloping floor in a house or something like that, we'll be very careful. We'll look at the foundation, see if there's been why there is that sloping, why if there's a crack in the foundation, has there been drainage causing things to settle and dip, subside, and have a structural engineer or a drainage contractor, you know, further evaluate those areas.
Oh, so you're like a little bit like a PI. What sort of training does someone have to go through to become a home inspector?
Well, it's there's a group of people that we belong to. It's a national organization called ASHI, which is stands for American Society of Home Inspectors, you have to perform a number of home inspections and pass tests. Generally, it's a 2 1-day tests, so it's pretty extensive, and be able to talk about with some sort of intelligence about how a house is put together and describe the systems that are in that house and how well they're working.
Do you have any kind of continuing education that you have to comply with?
Oh yeah. They we have to put in 20 hours every year of continuing education. Things are always changing in the homes, and we're always finding materials that are being used that haven't been used in the past, and they don't have a long track record. Some of them are good, some of them are not good. And and this is what the continuing education keeps us, you know, keeps us up to date on how, you know, if there's any problems with
Well, it seems like these building codes change more often than my underwear. So you must have to keep on top of that, right?
Wow, there it was. Okay. Well, hopefully, that would be really sad. I won't even get into that, what that means.
Okay, all right. I'm sorry, that was for Bob, so it wasn't funny. So what's the difference between a home inspection report and a structural pest control report?
Well, it's interesting. You know, structural home a pest report and a home inspection there is a fair amount of overlap in terms of the way things are constructed, put together. I mean, a home inspector is not a pest inspector. They're not looking for bugs or moisture damage caused by seepage into a home. But we do look if we do note it if we do see it. Mm-hmm. And home inspectors more systems. You know, like I said before, roof, electrical, siding, windows, decks, drainage, foundation. And the structural pest is looking more for water intrusion, wood-destroying pests, insects that get into the house and cause damage. They're looking in bathrooms to see if the water is staying inside the shower enclosure. Is there any oversplash that's caused damage to the subflooring and maybe framing that supports that down in the sub area or the floor below, and they're looking at deck damage. So that's basically the difference.
Okay.
I hope I explained that well enough.
It almost sounds cleaner than what you do in terms of not having to get your hands dirty.
Well,
anyway,
I wish I didn't have as many things to think about. as we do. But that's the nature of our industry is, you know, the whole ball of wax, and the pest is more concerned with pests and water damage and intrusion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think most of the buyers that you're dealing with now, do they understand the actual workings, what's going on with homes, or are they pretty clueless?
Some do. Some do. I think most, I would say if there's one area that people don't know about, and for good reason, is their foundation. And they're just not aware of what's down in the sub area, the crawl space under a home. So,
you know, it reminds me when I see, like, when we're working with a first-time home buyer and they're there for a home inspection and you're going through your thing and you're explaining, you know, the different systems. It's kind of like somebody buying a car. They really have no clue, I think, in the very beginning how a vehicle works. They just know that when they get in, they turn it on and it runs. When they come home, the house works, the refrigerator works, everything's in there. But they wouldn't know what signs there are of a failing hot water heater, or, you know, there's just that initial beginning of trying to learn about a property. You know, is there a place that you can recommend that a person goes to learn about that property so they don't have that doe-eyed kind of look? I mean, you're going to do their inspection, but is there another resource that you've thought of or seen in the past where you say, hey, this is where you learn about a house?
Good question. That's a really good question. I find that I'm continually learning about the house. And it's usually through, you know, our continuing education. If there's ever any questions, the Golden Gate chapter of the ASHI, American Society of Home Inspectors, is a good resource, and where people can probably call up or email, go to their website, and pose a question and get some information. Other than that,
I don't know.
There could be a dummy book coming your way.
No, I'm thinking we need to address that on the Property Beat website. I think that we should just say here's some first time things you need to know about how to operate. Yeah, that definitely is a good idea. Anyway. Glad you thought of it. Thanks. Hey, we're going to pause for a quick break. We're going to be right back right after this.
Hi, this is Cliff Parati, host of The Property Beat on KLOK 1170 AM. Lisa P. and I want to let you know that we are available to help you with your real estate needs, whether locally here in the Bay Area or internationally. You can reach us directly at 415-298-1899. Again, that's 415-298-1899. Or email us at cliff or lisa@thepropertybeat.com. We look forward to helping you with your real estate needs.
All right, well, welcome back. And here today we are talking with Eric Lee, Home Inspector Extraordinaire. If you have a question for Eric, give us a call at 408-912-5565. So, Eric, what's the most expensive parts of a house that a buyer should be concerned with in terms of working condition or overall condition?
Okay, I want to guess.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to think it's foundation and drainage. Okay, that's my guess.
You got it. Oh. So those are in that order. Foundation
it was foundation.
Foundation and drainage.
And drainage.
Drainage. And then what would you say is next?
I would say decks can be, depending on, you know, the extent, how extensive they are.
So
and concrete driveways and aprons over wood framing can be very, very expensive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like that parking deck, you mean.
Yep. Kind of
thing. Yeah, your parking deck, your concrete parking deck over framing. If the membrane leaks or even, you know, exterior patios over living areas can be very expensive and potentially very damaging if they leak and cause, you know, water intrusion gets down into the framing and causes damage.
Yeah. Gosh, I would have thought like the sewer line and roof, but I think you're right. When I think about it, foundation and drainage can be uber, uber expensive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, foundations, well, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80,000, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, and those are the fixes that you take care of, but aren't very pretty. It's not like you get a new kitchen out of it. And
yeah,
you
nobody's going to love your house more because you went and fixed the underbelly of it.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Ooh, that's
not real sexy.
Yeah. Do I go for the pretty or do I go for the functional?
I don't know. You could go with a pretty and then end up with a house that's down the hill.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So, Eric, what percentage of the reports do you think you do are actually for sellers as they're considering selling?
I was thinking about that the other day. We do a little bit more of that now. I couldn't really give you a percentage. Maybe 20%. Some realtors are doing that now to make the negotiation process a little more streamlined. Mm-hmm. And so we do more inspections for people for buyers. But I would say we're doing more pre-sale inspections than we've done in the past.
You know, when I have given our buyers a pre-sale inspection on a house and they read, you know, all these documents, they just 9 out of 10, they get freaked out and they just decided it's way too much. Are they, if somebody does a pre-inspection and hands it to a potential buyer, are you open to having them call you or coming out and doing a re-inspection and walking them through the house so that they...
Yeah, just pointing out, explaining what you've got.
Well, in fact, yes, we do. And we encourage, that we're looking for the business, but we are. But but we really feel that it's most important for a potential buyer, to go over the property with a home inspector, be at the site of... during the home inspection, and if they weren't there for the pre-sale inspection, then it's really important to be there when it's re-reviewed if we're called to do it. And I can point things out to them that they may not pick up in the text. You know, it's just right. Always better to see it and then reinforces what you may have read in the report.
So you prefer that the buyers are there during your inspection?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Does that ever get, dicey? I mean, do you ever kind of like – do you ever have the buyer that wants to follow you, like, can I go into the house with you? Can I go on the roof with you? Can I – that kind of stuff?
Yeah, and that's okay. Sometimes it is a little distracting. So it's definitely easier to be a little to be on my own, but But it's just an important thing for the buyer to be there, and I welcome them to follow me if they like. And every once in a while we get somebody that wants to go under the house, and that's fine. It's usually usually I'm by myself, and it's nice to have some company down there.
Yeah,
yeah, the ones with two legs as opposed to six.
Yes.
I remember one time. I think the first time I met you, I decided to come up on the roof with you. Actually, I think it was your dad because, you know, it was my first home inspection. I wanted to know what was going on. So he put up his little ladder. So I went up in my high-heeled shoes and stood on the roof. And he pointed out, I think it was your dad. But he was very gracious. And, you know, he couldn't have been more accommodating.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was a great guy. He started this business 32 years ago.
Wow.
And we've been doing home inspections ever since, under his great guidance.
When you're doing a home inspection, like on a condo, which where the buyer doesn't really own the building, do you look at the common areas of the complex or just the unit itself?
I like to look at everything if I can. It's not in the scope of standards to look at the common areas, but I do like to see how the structure is sited, what the shape of the windows are. If we can get up on the roof, we'll go up there. But a lot of home associations don't like us to get up on the roof because that's their responsibility, and they'd rather us not be up there. But I do like to see this kind of condition, where shutoffs are, you know, electrical, gas. Water in the event of an emergency. It's good for buyers to know that.
So, all right, this is usually a Lisa question.
Oh, I love these questions. Okay.
So what is the worst property you can remember inspecting?
No addresses.
No addresses, but just give us an overview. What's the worst situation you've ever inspected?
I would say there was a house in Mill Valley that I looked at early on in my career, and it was completely full of Power Post Beatles. I was going through it. I didn't know what was holding this house up. I just thought they should just run a bulldozer through this place and call it a day. And miraculously, the house, I don't know if it fell out of escrow or it was bought or sold, but it eventually was torn down and rebuilt.
Oh. Do you ever want to say to a buyer, don't do it, don't buy this place?
Yes. Yes.
So how do you do that delicately without, well, I would think that if a buyer is doing an inspection with you and you're coming up with all these little issues, I suspect you get the question of, if you were me, would you buy this house? Do you get that question?
Sometimes the house is just, there's so many big issues that you just can't address them all. It doesn't make sense financially. It would take way too much time for me to write the report, and the cost would be prohibitive in terms of what I would charge, just because of liability. And so we would. There's I would say maybe five or six homes I've just declined to inspect or
really
talk the buyer out of it. Just say, you know what, there's just too much. There's just too much going on here. I don't think this is a good house for you or anybody.
So you have at times refused to inspect a property based upon what you've seen?
Not refused, but I guess a better way to say that would be just really strongly recommended that we just let's just stop this inspection right now.
Yeah.
Because there's just too much.
How does that go over with the agent?
The poor
and the
agent
buyer
standing there going, what?
Well, I found that the agents in where I work in Marin County are pretty savvy, and they usually want the best for their clients, and I think they know what a good house and a bad house, the difference between that is, and the costs that are related to making major repairs, foundations, structural changes, drainage, things like that, that are expensive. And when they hear me or they see for themselves as we go through the house what's going on, if they heard when they hear that, they're not surprised.
Yeah. Hey, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with our guest, Eric Lee, right after this. Hi, this is Cliff Perotti, host of The Property Beat. So you may not know this, but we are sponsored by a local real estate company here in Northern California called Lyon & Foster International. The good folks at Lyon & Foster are an international luxury real estate company, helping home buyers and sellers as well as investors, whether they're buying or selling a home locally here in the Bay Area or abroad in a foreign country. So if you'd like some help or like to discuss those opportunities, please give the folks at Lyon & Foster a call. You can reach them toll-free at 855-367-4200. Again, 855-367-4200. Or you can email them at thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com. Again, that's thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com. And welcome back to The Property Beat, where we are talking home inspections with Eric Lee of Charles Lee & Sons, Home Inspector Extraordinaire. If you have a question or comment, simply call in at 408-912-5565 or hit us up on Twitter at The Property Beat.
Hey, Eric, I have a question. How long does it take to do a home inspection? Like, let's say you've got a property that's under, like it's 3,000 square feet. How much time do you actually think you will be there inspecting that home?
I usually schedule now or allow for 3 hours for inspection of 2,500 to 3,000 square foot house.
Okay.
And of course, it depends on vintage. I know some inspectors charge more for older properties, because there's generally more to talk about, more time to look at that's necessary. So, but generally we figure 3 hours. Sometimes it's a little under, sometimes a little over.
Yeah. Okay. This is kind of a long question, but it seems to me that you have a bit of a balancing act that you have to do. On one end, you're giving your the buyer all sorts of information that they need to know in order to make a good decision. And sometimes it's the good, the bad, and the really ugly. So when you've got a situation like that, how do you deal? You know that the house is kind of going south. You have to tell the agent as well. How do you do that delicately so that you don't piss off the agent and help the buyer as well?
Well, I've always felt that I don't get paid enough to say anything except for talking straight about the house. So I don't.
Yeah, the truth.
I don't spend a lot of time worrying about it. We've been doing this for 30 years now. So if we make a fairly serious recommendation, if something's defective or failing or something like that, generally it's like I said before, it's fairly obvious to everybody, and I'll take them through and show them, and we'll recommend that they talk to a qualified contractor or engineer to look at it. But
that's another question. So then as you are going through a report and you find something, let's just take an easy one. Like, let's say the roof is really worn. Mm-hmm. You're going to recommend to the buyer that they get a roofer out there for an estimate, or do you actually give estimates in your reports?
We don't give estimates. Home inspectors don't give estimates in their reports.
Okay.
And so, if you get an estimate or estimates, let's say you get three or four estimates, they're all going to be different. And we don't do the work, so it'd be difficult for us to give an estimate. We'll give a ballpark, but we don't put that in our report.
Right.
We'll basically go up on a roof and we can say, okay, this roof is got 10 years on it. You probably got another 10 years of serviceable life left, and maybe some patching's needed. Talk to a qualified roofer to further evaluate or make the necessary maintenance or repairs, whatever you need.
Okay. All right. Well, so then do you recommend certain repair people? I mean, do you have like a list of those kinds of people so buyers can actually, know where to go to if they want to pull in resources?
We do have lists of, contractors, specialty contractors, electricians, roofers, foundation mm-hmm. people. We always recommend that, the buyer gets a few estimates, not just one. And get a better sampling of what costs may be necessary to make the repairs or maintenance.
Okay, we'd like to remind our listeners, if you'd like to join in the conversation here in our last few minutes, we've got a couple of minutes left, you can call us at 408-912-5565. So, go ahead.
All righty.
She's looking at me like she wants to ask a question. Go ahead.
I do. So, what are the 3 to 4 top tips you would give a buyer about a property or a property inspection? So they're all excited. They're going to buy their first home. What would you say to them? What are the 3 nuggets?
Yeah, that's a good question.
In terms of, this is for the buyer looking at the house, what
yeah.
they should be looking
yeah.
for?
Yeah.
Well, I would, coming from Marin County, I would recommend that they read the report.
Okay. Actually, read your report. That's one, yeah.
Read the report and pay attention to drain, the big 3 things, the roof, the drainage, and the foundation.
Yeah.
Pay attention to your realtor. They've gone down this road many times with other buyers, potential buyers, and they know what they're talking about for the most part.
Would you ever recommend a buyer not get an inspection or do a due diligence inspection period?
Oh no. No. I can give you personal knowledge or experience for that. I bought a house here in Marin County about 15 years ago, and I looked at the property just walk through and looked at it and then I said, you know what, I need to do an inspection like I would do for a client. And it was amazing how much stuff I found that I just hadn't thought about or realized. And this is somebody that does it every day. And
yeah.
So I would recommend definitely. I mean, you wouldn't buy a car, which costs a lot less than a house without a mechanic going over the mechanics of the car. So I would definitely recommend having the home inspected by a qualified person.
That's good. So you hired yourself.
You hired yourself.
Nice,
yeah.
Yes, I did, I thank God that I did, because I saw things that I just completely missed and not thought about.
Well, thank goodness you listened to yourself. So, how can our listeners reach you if they want more information?
Well, they can call our phone number. It goes right to me, and that phone number is 415-461-6990. They can also go to our website, CowleyandSons.com,
mm-hmm.
and or they can email me at CowleyandSons@yahoo.com.
Great. Well, we'd like to thank our listening audience for tuning in to today's show, and thank you to our special guest, Eric Lee. Thanks for being on the show, man.
Yeah,
well,
thanks,
thank you
Eric.
Very much. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks.
And thanks to my co-host, Lisa P., and our engineer, Marco. If you want to hear this show again, you can download the podcast on iTunes or on our website at thepropertybeat.com. And if you'd like to reach Lisa or I to talk about your real estate situation, email us at cliff or lisa@thepropertybeat.com. That's it for this week. Well, that's a wrap for this week's show. Thanks for joining us here at The Property Beat, where real estate is part of your life. We hope you've enjoyed this week's show and encourage you to come back next week when we've got yet another lively guest and more real estate conversation. If you'd like to check us out on the web, you can find us at thepropertybeat.com. For now, I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with co-host Lisa P., saying that's a wrap. See you next time on The Property Beat.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.